everybody, and welcome to episode 2 of A Sprinkle of Disney podcast. We're so happy to have you here for episode 2 today, which is called Only You Can Fill the World with Sunshine. We're going to be talking about Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs today, which is part of our Disney Classic Animated Movie stream of the podcast. So firstly, welcome back to everyone who has listened to our first episode. It's really nice to have you back. And a huge thank you to everyone who did listen to the first episode. We thought it might have no listeners, so it's nice that it did have listeners, so thank you. It's been really nice hearing people get back to us, for people who have taken part in any of our Instagram challenges. We'll talk more about that at the end as well. This is a recap of our social media. If you're new, hello to you as well. So you can catch up with our previous episode as well, because we're on number 2. But we'll link you to all the right places towards the end as well. So we're just really happy that people have enjoyed listening to us talk about Disney, and we're just really excited to keep this moving. So yeah, just a huge thank you to everybody who has listened. It means loads to us, so thank you.
So as Katie was just saying, I feel like I should also thank everyone, just because otherwise, you know, I don't have a present. So thank you to everyone for listening to our first episode, and honestly, like, the support we've had as well, and the interaction and engagement on our Instagram account, it's been so overwhelming. Like, the amount of people that have commented and liked our pictures and engaged with us, like, it's been amazing. So thank you so much for that. And so I'm just going to outline the kind of rough segments of this episode. And as Katie said, we'll be talking about Snow White. So to start with, we'll just introduce the film and just go over a short kind of plot summary in the background of the film, just in case, you know, that if you've not seen the film, you might want a bit of background. And then we'll also be discussing our thoughts on the film in the time it was released, then we'll be discussing that versus our thoughts on the film just overall, so kind of not thinking about the time as much, and then we'll be discussing the characters in the film and comparing them to other characters, so that's things like princess and villains, so we're discussing and comparing them to other ones in the future Disney princess films, and then we will have our individual ratings out of 10 for the film, which I think is the most exciting part of this episode, to be honest.
I'm gonna have to think really hard, Rosie. I'm gonna have to think really hard about what my rating is.
I know, and I think it will probably change as we go through this episode. Yeah. Because, like, we both watched the film again, like, this week in preparation, because I think if we hadn't done that, our scores would have been a lot lower, to be honest.
Like 0.5.
Honestly. So I think we've given it a good chance. We won't be too biased, no. Which is, you know, always good. So yeah, that will be at the end. We'll give you a bit of suspense, as we go through, and you might be able to work out where we're leading towards, but we don't know yet ourselves.
No, so we shall see what comes out of our mouths when it comes to rate the film.
So as we did in the last episode, we're just going to go through some fun facts again. We'll put dip in and out of those in the episode. So our first fun fact is that to share his vision of the film with the animators, Walt Disney acted out all of the roles of Snow White as he told them the story.
That's,
I love
so
imagining
cute.
That happening. It's so cute and wholesome. Like, can you imagine?
I also have this idea of Walt just stood in this room full of, like, probably male animators.
True.
Acting the whole thing out, probably about, like, half an hour. And all the animators look at him a bit like, what did we get ourselves into with this?
Yeah, like, are you okay, Walt?
That's cute, though. That's really cute.
It is really cute.
Oh, I love, like, that's one of the things I'm going to talk about later in terms of the bits that I like. Just there's a quote from Walt right at the beginning that I, as a kid, you don't notice because it's writing. So I'll talk about that later because that was really cute. It obviously meant a lot to him. So even if we're not, it's not our favourite film, it clearly meant a lot to him, which is nice. So, yeah. So let's go. Let's get into it. All things Snow White. So you may have seen the film or not have seen the film, or you may have seen the film many years ago. Like, I haven't seen the film until I watched it last night, and then I don't think I've watched it, you know, for years. Like, I think I watched when Disney Plus came out, I watched the Hi-Ho scene because my dad wanted to watch it on our big TV. But other than that, I don't know the last time that I watched it. So if you haven't seen it in a while, basic plot summary. So it's based on the Brothers Grimm fairy tale of Snow White. With the idea of an evil queen, of course she's evil, wouldn't be a Disney movie if she wasn't, an evil queen who has a magic mirror, who basically tells her that she's pretty, and then the Snow White, who, the evil queen is her stepmom, and then Snow White's kind of really pretty as well, so the queen dresses her really ugly and in rags, because she doesn't want her to be prettier than her, and then one day she asks the mirror, who's the prettiest, and it's not the queen anymore, so the queen wants Snow White killed, Snow White runs away from the killer, lives with 7 dwarves, and then ends up eating the magical apple that almost kills her. I think that's a fair summary, personally.
It is.
and, the, And there's lots of animals and magic and singing, and there's a random prince in it as well. It's also quite important. It was released in 1937. It was the first ever Disney film that was a full-length animated feature-length film. So it was the first time ever in history that an animated film had been like long, and I was shocked that we were both shocked that it was an hour and a half long. I was quite shocked.
Yeah,
I'd like settled in for like 50 minutes an hour, because obviously Dumbo was only 40 minutes, so I was like, oh, it'd be fine. Well, I was wrong. It was like an hour and a half commitment. So yeah, but I think it made huge like shockwaves in the film industry because of that. And if you notice when you watch it makes a big deal of saying that it was Technicolor, because that was a huge deal as well. So for it to be in Technicolor and animated and feature length was a real achievement. So I think even if you're not the biggest fan of the film, I think the achievement that it was at its time, like, it can't be undenied. Like, it just can't be denied. There we go.
Yeah, exactly. And that leads nicely on, actually, because I've done a bit of research into the reception of the film, like, in its time and how it was received by people. And it did send, like, shockwaves around, like, the world, because it was such a big deal. And I've actually got a quote here where it says, "The film single-handedly created a new genre, was the biggest moneymaker of all time after its initial run, and has been re-released in theatres more than any other feature film."
Wow.
So it's a pretty big deal. It won 11 awards, an honorary Academy Award as well, which is pretty big deal. And it was, as Katie said, it was the world's first feature-length animated picture. And because of that, it was considered a revolution, because it had never been done before. So it was considered a really, really big deal at the time. And I do think, as Katie just said, like, you've got to appreciate it with that context as well. Like, it was completely new, so there's nothing to compare it to in that respect.
No.
And clearly, like, in its time, Disney, like, Walt was really happy with it. And the world was kind of taken aback, like, what is this? This is new, yeah. Like, this is really cool.
It must have been really exciting to go and see that in the cinema. That must have been really exciting. And I think, because even I watched it with my little sister last night. She was the first time she watched it the whole way through, so you'll get some interesting insight from a 12-year-old as well, on her opinion of the film. But I think what we both kind of noticed was that we kept saying, for its time, like, it was beautiful, and how obviously we recognised that, like, the graphics weren't the best in the world, but how it was beautiful in its own way. So I think, like, you know, even as you'll probably find out shortly, that we weren't the biggest fan of some of the characters, or some of the plot, it is a beautiful film, I think.
Yeah, and actually as well, just following on from the praise it's had, there's really not a lot of critique for this film out there. Like, not as much as you'd think there would be.
I suppose, though, it was too early for, like, current critics to critique it.
Yes, very true. Very, very true. But yeah, so it's kind of, like, the opinion of it is that the animation still holds up to this day, though it's very basic. It still holds up enough that, you yeah. know, it's beautiful animation.
Yeah.
So you definitely got to give it credit for that. I'd say that's probably one of the best parts of the film. But we'll discuss further what we think of the characters.
Please stand clear of the doors. Por favor, manténganse alejado de las puertas.
Our segment has ended, which means that there is a new Disney fun fact for you. So fun fact number two today is Walt Disney was presented with one normal-sized honorary Oscar and seven little Oscars for Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs in 1938. I've heard this before, and I love that idea. I've had this idea that he kind of just hid it on, like, his fireplace or something. It was kind of, like, sat. I think that'd be such a cool thing to have. I wonder where that is now.
It just sounds really cute, though, doesn't it? And yeah. Also, can you imagine him trying to, like, hold them at the same time? I'm kind of imagining him cradling them, like, hugging them as if they're his little children.
I hadn't even thought about
maybe he
that.
Did consider them as his children. Probably. But, yeah, I'm assuming they've been passed down. I don't know. We're going to now talk about our thoughts on the film for its time, and then we'll talk about our thoughts on the film overall. So, start with Katie. What do you think of the film for the time it was made and released?
Oh, so, I think the time, as we've said, the time it was released, it was fantastic that it existed. I think the fact that it has a female lead for the time, as problematic as she may be, and the fact that she was a female lead is quite impressive. The fact that, like, the main guy, Prince, who actually, that's a fun fact that I don't think we have, Prince Ferdinand is the name of the prince. Doesn't mention it in the film, but it is
no.
The animator or the producer or something confirmed he is called Prince Ferdinand, so he does have a name. But Prince Ferdinand isn't really in it, is he really? So there's not a lot of male presence other than the dwarves. So I think the fact that, like, you know, it's led, the film is led by two women. Problematic about the characterization, which we'll talk about in a minute, but the fact that there was two women leading it, I think, is quite impressive for 1937. The animation for its time must have been fantastic. I mean, the level of detail in the animation is incredible. Like, me and Ruthie have said this before, but the detail in the beds, for example, like at the end of each dwarf's bed, but they've got their name on it, and it's got all the like the wood carving, like they're all different, and I just think that was so lovely, at the effort that was put into every scene, every like still was just amazing. So yeah, I think for its time it must have been pretty impressive, and I think it would have been like a really exciting day out to go and see that in the cinema.
Yeah, definitely.
I think though, it's also hard because it was a different cinema time, but I think you said the same, Rosie, that we found it a bit slow in times. There were times where I switched off a little bit.
It was, yeah,
like the bit where the dwarves, they all go to sleep. I think I missed about 10 minutes of it because I just switched off until someone came in the window. But again, I think that's cinema, and I think older cinema tended to have a lot more of those slower moments of like showing scenery or showing processes that our cinema doesn't really do now because we're more focused on action. I don't know if that was part of the cinema time or that was just bad writing, which is a bit slow at times. So I think it could have been shorter, definitely. Other than that, I'd say for its time, pretty impressive. I'm going to leave it there.
Yes.
I have a feeling you probably think about the same, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I do. And one element that I would mention as well is that obviously the 1930s were a time for women where they were still very much domesticated in their roles. Yeah. So they were very much still cooking and cleaning, as that was their main role in the house. Like, whilst they were out at work as well, they still had to come back and do all the cooking and cleaning because the men expected them to do that in that time. So it is definitely reflective of the time, how Snow is represented in the film. And I think, like, obviously, then in the time, it would have just been perceived as kind of everyday life. So actually, maybe the women would have related to it when it came out. But obviously, that's a little bit problematic. We'll go into that in a bit.
We will get to that bit.
It's hard not to say it's problematic because it is, but that's what happened in that time. We have to accept that for now. And yes, like building on what you said with the animation, I think I can just imagine like going to see that film and being blown away, because being the first feature-length animated film, like, I just can't imagine a world without one of those, you know? So, like, that coming around, I know we said it was slow, but also maybe because it was slow, it was more enjoyable at the time because it was longer, so it was more exciting.
That's true.
But I can definitely see why people would have enjoyed it in the time, because it would have been a real buzz around the fact that it was such a new thing. And like I said, I do think people probably could relate to Snow, like women could have related to Snow during that time. But obviously, not now.
No,
so,
not I personally don't identify with Snow as a personal level.
No, she's probably the furthest away in terms of who I relate to.
Princesses. Because even her, like, you know, her rags weren't that bad, to be fair. I was thinking that it had a nice like collar. I was quite impressed with the collar of her rag dress. And she seemed quite happy at the well fetching water.
Yeah.
She didn't really suffer, did she?
And I suppose as well, I don't know, I mean, I did a bit of research into this, but I suppose like ambition in terms of like women as well back in that time wouldn't have been quite as strong as it is now, of course, like, because they didn't have the same opportunities. So I suppose like the ambition Snow has could have been relatable to people at the time as well. We kind of have the same sort of view in terms of like what we think of it for its time.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll have the same view of what we think of it overall as well. So overall then, what do you think? So not really taking the context of its time into account.
Right. So I did enjoy it more than I thought I would. I think I enjoyed, I mean, the songs. I mean, if we have time, I want to kind of like quickly like run through the songs and because I think there are some that are quite nice songs. And there was more song in it than I remembered. So I quite enjoyed that. I loved the community of like the dwarves. Like I was thinking this last night when I was watching it, and the way they've captured the family element of the dwarves was really lovely. Like when they have that, I love that dancing scene where they all get up and dance.
So cute.
I think that's amazing, and especially in terms of animation for then as well, I think it was fantastic. And it felt like a real family, which I really liked. So there were bits that I like the, you know, the animal animation and the animal interaction was great, and then my sister loved that bit as well. There was a bit where like the rabbits hug on the windowsill, that was well cute. I struggle a lot, and I think we'll come up onto this more when it comes to we're going to discuss like the characters and especially the female characters, but I just struggle with it in the fact that Snow White literally doesn't really have an impact on the film. She has loads of things done to her, and you know, yes, she has an impact on the dwarves' life, but that's only so they'll let her stay initially. And it's like she has to prove herself over and over again. And the whole plot with the prince, I just couldn't, like, so honestly, listeners, my sister watched it with me, so she's 12. And we're watching it, and you know, the beginning when like he appears and he just, it's so creepy. He, like, she's singing really in the well, and then he just appears in the well with her. Like, that's, it's a bit close. Like, you know,
it's not okay.
No. So she legs it, and he persists. And my sister was like, why does Snow White look like 13? I was like, well, because she's like meant, well, like 12, 13. She's meant to be that young, which I didn't notice when I was younger, but when I watched it back this time, she does look really young in her face. Which is interesting when you watch it as a different age. She's like, well, why does a prince look 40? And I was like, that's a very fair question. Because he is just really creepy. Also has a really feminine face. One of the only animation problems I have with it is that his face looks exactly like Snow White. Like, just not with the long hair. Which was just bizarre, because everyone else's features are so sharp, like with the dwarves, and his was, clearly he was a last minute job. But like, the bit when he sings on the balcony, I'm like, you've only just met her, and then like when he just rocks up at the end and just kisses a dead girl, like, it's weird. And I just think it's so sad, because she could have had such a nice life with the dwarves, to be honest. She could have been happy, and she could have been merry, and you know, it was the bit at the end where she's died. No one, she doesn't seem alarmed that she's died, and then she gets back up. She doesn't question what's happened. She just goes, oh, a prince, and gets on a horse and rides to a cloud castle. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
She was like, no woman is that stupid to sit there and not question why she's in a glass coffin and who this random man is. In my sister's words, they sang once on a balcony and now they're off to live together forever.
Yeah.
So that was the problem I had with it, you know, and the fact that he could have been anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest. He might not even have been a prince. We don't know.
Yeah, that's one of the problems I have with it as well.
Oh.
Because they've just met. And actually, have they exchanged a conversation? No, they haven't. They've sung together. It's not the same.
And even, like, the sexualization of her. Like, she's meant to be 13, 12. And even in the time period, like, no, that's not okay. Like, you know, like, she goes out to meet him and, like, she legs it up the stairs. As you know, oh, women, I must run away from a man. And she, like, goes up the stairs to the balcony and she stands there, like, primping her hair and, like, flattening her dress. And I'm like, be 13, like, no. That constant sexualization of her as a character because she's a young woman is a bit that I think I just noticed. I was like, it's not okay. Because I think the film would actually be quite pleasant without that part.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it would be better without that part. And, like, I mean, there is the theory, though, that the end, she actually does die, and the ending is actually her going off to heaven and living that dream that she made for herself. There is a theory that that's the ending. I don't think it is a fairy tale. But, like, then there is that idea it's not real because that's how ridiculous it looks.
I prefer that ending because it seems more legit and acceptable.
Which is quite sad.
It is, I know.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, that's just my approach to it in general. I think the plot, I think the thing is the plot wasn't the priority. The animation was the priority for them in terms of the time. So I think...
You can definitely tell.
Yeah, and I think they were copying off an old fairy tale as well. I think it's a shame that they left out quite a lot of the details that newer versions of Snow White bring in. So things about, like, the colours in her face and stuff like that. Although it's there, a lot of that descriptive work with words isn't there, whereas the animation is instead. So the dialogue isn't great. There's not a lot of it.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my points.
I love the dwarves. I do enjoy the dwarves. They do make me laugh. I enjoyed them more than I thought I would. Songs are all right. They're not ones that I voluntarily put on. I mean, Someday My Prince Will Come does make me want to gouge my eyeballs out.
It is a bit... lackluster, isn't it?
Like, it's a nice song, but then you listen to what she's saying and she's just like dreaming about this man she's like met once coming to like fix her life. Now, fellow women who are listening, it's not the way forward, is it? You know what I mean? Like, it's just not. So I enjoyed it as a film. Is it one that I would turn around and put on like regularly? No. Is it one that I'll put on for nostalgia maybe like every 3 years? Maybe.
Yeah.
Is it a soundtrack I've listened to? No. Is it one I would encourage my daughter, if I ever have one, to follow? No. But did I enjoy it? Yeah. It's a Disney film still, isn't it? So, yeah. How about you? I feel like we probably have similar...
I think we have very similar views of it. And I think, like you said, like, I do have the issue with the prince. He is definitely one of the main issues. And I think it's like just that lack of ambition as well. Like, Snow's ambition is literally just to get married and fall in love. And I just...
Some random man.
Yeah, and that's the other issue. Like, fair, if you get to know this man, sure.
Well, quite.
But...
Like our later princesses.
Exactly.
Like our Rapunzels.
Yes.
You know, with Flynn. That was a relationship that developed, and we were fine with this one.
And we've seen with Hans in Frozen, you know, it just it doesn't work out sometimes. So you need to get to know these people. And I just think it's so rushed. And when he appears over that wall and starts singing next to her by the well, I'm just a bit taken aback.
Exactly. And I've never questioned before, right? But the dwarves don't even question who
Very
he is.
True.
They just let him walk up and start kissing.
Yeah.
I was like, that's not normal.
And they're so protective over her up until that moment. It's like, they're just taken aback that she's alive.
Because it's a man.
Well, this is the thing. And then, yes, so the ending is a problem for me. Because I know we want a happy ending. And I know, like, fairy tales, like, should have a happy ending. And maybe, like, love is that ending.
Yeah.
But it's just so forced. And, like, she seems so happy about being kissed by this prince. And I know you'd be happy to be alive, don't get me wrong, if you've just died you'd be happy to be alive again, sure, but you're right, she doesn't even take in the fact that anything's happened to her. She's just suddenly in his arms and it's happily ever after, bye. Like, but that's not realistic.
No, and literally says goodbye to all seven of her friends who have brought her in, like, yeah, protected her, and then is like, bye, see you later. Like, her happy ending could have very easily been being alive, yeah, and having good friends. That would have been a happy ending, yes, that would have worked. Just saying, Disney.
And it's just a bit more deeper, really, as well. Because you're right, the relationship, yeah, she forms with the dwarves is actually so nice. Like, I used to think it was creepy, but actually rewatching it the other day, it's really sweet. Like, she is obviously a motherly figure to them, but it's like they needed something like that to kind of sort themselves out. Because you could tell when she walked in, it was a tip. So they just needed that encouragement.
And she needed a purpose as well.
Exactly.
So I think, like, they fit each other. And, like, yeah, by, you know, after the initial clean of the house, which I'm not okay with, you know, women are not there just to clean houses. Mm-hmm. But, like, the fact that she still had that level of authority, like, you go and wash your hands or you're not getting dinner. Like, I quite like that.
I like that as well, yeah.
And after that point, it's very equal. So, like, they do things for each other.
Yeah.
And she has relationships with each different dwarf, mm-hmm, in a different way. Whereas, obviously, that's another thing, I think, when it comes to Prince, let's not be all one-sided. It reflects it's not a great image of man or men either.
True, men, very true.
Don't act like men just have to arrive and save a random woman. And that, yeah, idea of chivalry is in there with the fact that, you know, men didn't necessarily at the time want to marry the woman they were chosen either. And there was a lot of pressure on a man to turn up, find a wife, and also to provide for people that,
yeah,
they barely
that's need. A good point. It kind of reveals kind of both of the expectations for, yeah, women and men, and kind of portrays that,
yeah,
in that time very well, actually, as well.
And the fact that he's barely featured in the film, so,
yeah,
like, he barely has any time, he has, like, zero lines apart from the random singing, and yet is expected to save the day.
It's kind of like, it's not worth, like, they've decided it's not worth us getting to know this guy. He's just here, yeah, to save Snow. Like, that's what, yeah, he's here for.
So it presents, yeah, tricky, right, gender dynamics in that way as well, because it's that unrealistic expectation upon men to provide. And I think, you know, I think that's why we'll get to Frozen 2 eventually on this, like, you know, stream of animated movies. But both Rosie and I love that idea of Kristoff being, like, more emotionally intelligent and,
yeah,
emotionally vulnerable. And that's obviously an issue that lots of men in our society face today. So, mm-hmm, I think it is a nice reflection. Well, nice is the right word, but it's an accurate reflection of the fact that sometimes men are kind of, like, are also seen as tools in their own way,
yeah,
by society. And it's that expectation on men to fix things and to sort things out,
yeah,
which isn't
definitely
fair either.
Yeah, and I think just to conclude, like, my thoughts on it as well, because I do have some happy thoughts on the,
yeah,
film. I found it a bit negative. I love the animation. I think it's beautiful. The animals, for me, make the film. Like, I just love Snow's interaction with the animals.
Yeah.
I just think it's so, like, cute. It reminds me of Bambi, and I think it's the same sort
that.
Of animation style, yeah, and it's the same sort of animals. You've got the deer, they're all, like, forest animals.
That's
and
so
I just
true.
Love it when they help her clean. Like, I know it's not exactly hygienic, you know, squirrels, like, using their tails to, like, dry plates, but I appreciate it because it's so cute. And
it
I think
is.
Without them it would be lacking, like, it would be missing something, and it wouldn't be as cute and sweet and wholesome. So for me, that's my favorite part of the whole film. And obviously, like, that's to do with the setting of the film. And
yeah,
I love the forest.
That's so true, because when you just said that, I hadn't even thought about that before. If you look at the more recent Disney movies, princess movies, the presence of animals has dwindled and dwindled and dwindled down to normally just one sidekick, if that. So, you know, if we look at Frozen, I mean, we have Sven, but obviously he's Kristoff's. So there isn't, like, you know, obviously the sidekick is meant to be Olaf. So there isn't really, like, animal presence, really. Pocahontas has quite a bit. But I think you're right. I think that's something that definitely, you know, you look at Cinderella, you look at The Little Mermaid even, Sleeping Beauty, the presence of animals is really strong there.
It
whereas
is.
Actually when you get to the newer princesses, it's not as much.
And it adds a lot to it as well. It adds a lot to, like, the kind of feel. Like, as I said, it feels really sweet because there's animals around. And as much as I love the sidekicks, obviously, because they've got more of a personality, I think that's the thing. They kind of, I suppose, like, zoomed in on particular animals and gave them a personality with the sidekicks rather than had, like, them as background characters. But it does definitely add a lot to Snow White for me. And I think, like I said, that's one of my favourite parts. And, yeah, the songs, are they the best? No. Do they fit the film? I guess they do fit the film. So. I did like them, but as I say, like, we were saying, like, would I actually watch this film out of choice? Like, again, I don't know. Like, maybe, like you were saying, like, every few years, just for nostalgia purposes, because it is very nostalgic. I remember I used to have a Dopey rucksack, and it was so cute. It came with the video, I think, and I used to wear it all the time. My parents would definitely remember this. And yeah, I think that's why this film is very nostalgic to me. So no matter what we think in terms of, you know, there's issues, I will always have, like, a place in my heart for this film, I think.
It was funny you said that, because I remembered when I was watching Grumpy, it was the weirdest thing. It was like a Grumpy stuffed toy, but it was like a door, you know, the thing with door handles.
I can't imagine what this looks like.
It was literally like imagine, like, a Grumpy, like, toy, like, plushy, and then his hat, like, the back of his hat had a hole in it that I, like, hung on my door. I don't know why.
That's such a weird
random
invention.
I know. Well, I had one. So you're right. I think, you know, it does bring out those memories. Would we watch it again? Probably not. Would I put the soundtrack on? Probably not.
No. No.
So, yeah. I mean, I feel like we've been fair. I mean, I think the other thing I enjoyed as well is that it's meant to be set in Germany.
Yeah.
And I was saying this to Rosie before, like, if you look very carefully in the wishing well scene, you can see that Snow's got, like, clogs on, like, German-style clogs. And the fact that it was designed in America and with those details of international clothing, that was really cool as well. So there's definitely levels of detail in the film that are really commendable, given the time period as well. So, yes, I think we enjoyed the detail. And we enjoyed the trip down memory lane. Did we enjoy the gender roles? No.
No. It's a strong no on that one. But as we did say in the background, like, to be fair, for their time, I suppose it does reflect it. However, we're not happy with that still.
Should do better.
Exactly.
Please stand clear of the doors. Por favor, manténganse alejado de las puertas.
We'll move on to, like, more in-depth stuff now as well, and then our third fun fact of this episode. So during production of Snow White, Walt Disney kept a menagerie of animals on the studio lot as live reference for the animators. Now this I love, because we were just talking about the animals, and I just love that. Imagine, like, showing up to work and there's some animals. Like, I need that in my life now.
That's your dream. It's like,
it honestly is.
Like, oh, look, a deer.
Literally, I mean, to be fair, I'd be very distracted, but I suppose for them, like, it was a reference, so it was
really
fair.
Cool.
I know. So yeah, that, I think that's really cute.
The next segment I'm very excited about. So it's we're going to talk about the characters, but mainly the two female leads. So you've got Snow White as a princess and the Evil Queen as a villain. We didn't really talk a lot about her in the last section, to be fair, because again, she just gets lost. Because the plot and the writing isn't great in terms of, like, carrying a plot and including characters, I don't think. It's more about, like I said, the animation and the music and the, oh, look, we can draw. I think I've actually done a project on this before, like an academic project. So I'm interested to hear what you think, Rosie, about the characters in the film and Snow White, and how do you think Snow White probably compares to other princesses throughout time, I think is a good question as well.
So I think that's a good question. And also, I also did an essay in college, in A-level, for English language.
not really? The English language. I did the EPQ, so some of you may still do it. It was called the Extended Project Qualification, and it was equivalent to an A-level, and I had to do like 5,000 words, like essay, and like plan and research and stuff. And my question that I chose, because you could pick it on anything, was actually, how has the presentation of women changed in Disney animated films between 1937 and 2010, 11, whenever Frozen came out? So I literally covered this question. That was my entire EPQ. So I've got some books to recommend for you all. I hope you're excited.
See, that's really interesting, because I think, so I came up with mine myself as well, and it was for A-level, but it was like for a project. And honestly, I think it's exactly the same.
Yeah.
I don't know, because I selected 4 different princess films.
Yeah.
And Snow White was one of them. I mean, she had to be, because she was the first.
Yeah, she's quite significant that way.
Yes. But yeah, so like in terms of what do I think of Snow White? I mean, I don't know, like as we said, for her time, she does represent women in that time. So in that respect, I can't really fault that, because that is just history. Like, you know, that's what was happening in that time. However, she really doesn't talk a lot. And I think you said, Katie, what does she really bring to the film? I mean, she's a beautiful face, and, you know, is that all she brings? Like, she really doesn't say much, like, at all. She does sing, granted, but there's not a lot of like content with dialogue, really.
No.
And it kind of gives that impression of like a kind of very passive, like submissive, voiceless woman. And it's that stereotype.
Yeah, and she doesn't do a lot for herself in terms of like please herself or like get gratification herself. Like, it's always for other people, which is a good trait. It's good to, you know, be selfless. And I think that's something I picked up when I watched it, was the fact that I liked her more than I thought I would, because she was just a nice person. And she could have that authority when needed, like, you know, wash your hands. And when she makes them all show their individual hands, I was like, oh, savage. But I think, you know, she doesn't really get anything out of the film, does she? Like, you know, apart from a place to sleep, and a family and a community. But I think because everything is done for everybody else, she doesn't make a lot of choices. And I think that's where the most complex characters are the ones that have to make decisions and choices. And struggle with that. And that's where we really identify, for example, like with Judy Hopps in Zootropolis or Zootopia, the fact that, like, you know, she's determined to be a police officer, and then she turns around and when she gives it up, and she struggles. Whereas I feel like we don't ever see, although Snow White should struggle, she's literally being hunted by an evil queen, we don't see a struggle apart from that really random run around in the forest with the evil trees. Yeah, so I think I agree. I think it's hard to have a strong opinion on her, really, because she doesn't really do a lot.
I think she comes across to me as very optimistic and naive. She's longing for love, and she's almost too nice and too perfect, I think, as well. Mm. You want to see some kind of flaw in someone, and you see that in all the other princesses. Obviously, she is too trusting with the old hag when she comes
along. Oh, that was ridiculous.
But, I mean, that's something else. That's naivety at its, like, peak.
I mean, I had so many problems with that. I was like, why would you take a random apple from some random old woman? Why?
And to do with the optimism, right, so picture this. So how is she so optimistic, right? She's been cast out. Like, she's 12, 13, 14, however old she is. She's pretty young. She was nearly killed.
Yeah.
Would you really be singing? Like, I guess that's just Disney for you, and I guess they set a bar there with, you know, princesses singing when disasters are happening.
That's so funny. I hadn't even thought about this.
Like, why would you sing? Like, why would that be your next step? Like, you're literally on the floor. There's been a storm in the forest. A huntsman's been sent to kill you.
Oh.
And then suddenly you miss optimism. Like, I don't know. I guess it's a good way to look at life. And I wish I was more like that, I've got to be honest. But
it's unrealistic, isn't it? You know what I mean?
It is. It's very naive and a bit like, oh, you should probably, you know, take in your feelings about this and just not...
Because that scene where she just flings herself on the floor, I burst out laughing. And I know it's not right, but it was because it's just like so dramatic. Like when I've never had life get so much that I threw myself on the floor in a forest.
Yes, exactly. It's very dramatic, but then she just gets up.
And then she sits up and sings to the animals. And I'm like, I think you'd be a little bit traumatized. Like, I would.
You'd be terrified.
She was screaming a second ago. She must have lost her voice.
I know. Well, it's like she got amnesia or something, because honestly, she does a real 360 real quick.
Yeah.
So Yeah, I mean, I guess that's like positives and negatives. Like, she's a nice character, which is great, and she is optimistic, which, you know, is a good quality to have.
Yeah,
but she is a bit too naive, and like you say, she doesn't really do anything for herself. She's very motherly.
Yeah.
Again, obviously, to do with the time period that it was based in, that's one of the main roles that women had in that time. But she doesn't really do much for herself, doesn't really think about herself. And maybe that's why she just bypasses all the issues that happen to her, because she's trying to think about everyone else. But
yeah, I mean, I think as well, I think, you know, if we think about the time period itself, I mean, I'm trying to have a little look and see like what was going on around, you know, in America in 1937. Mm. I'm trying to think, you know, was it just escapism? Was it kind of, you know, supposed to be all positive and optimistic and,
yeah, that's
and
very
like
true.
That on purpose, so that people kind of went for an escape. I mean, quite often now in cinema, we go for stories, we go for something that we wouldn't normally see, and we go for that, you know, not, we don't go for tragedy, but let's be honest, tragedy in movies really appeals to us as
yeah,
a generation.
It does.
We thrive off that when we go and see films, and, you know, it really draws us in, whereas lots of the older films were kind of, I think, meant more for feel good and for escapism.
Yeah.
That probably explains why she is just so ridiculously positive. Even if she's literally been almost killed. And then she is killed and she still doesn't care.
Yeah. And I suppose like that optimism is like kind of like a good role model back in the time, like when they were watching it for women. It's like that the idea of hope. Like something will happen, something will come along, a prince will come along, change my life, will be good. But yeah, it is difficult, I suppose, because you have to think about the time that it was based in, and like you say, what was happening at the time as well, because it could have been to boost people, which is completely fair enough. But
it was the year that Amelia Earhart went missing, which is sad.
Interesting.
And it was the year that, there's quite a few disasters, it was the year of the Hindenburg disaster, Memorial Day massacre. So it does sound, to be honest, there was Mississippi flooding, so it sounds like someone needed a pick-me-up, so maybe that's what it was.
They needed a break. They needed some sort of happiness. And to be fair, like, there is a real theme of, like, positivity, and it does lift you up a bit when you're watching it, especially the scenes with the animals, and I think with the dwarves as well. They definitely pick you up, especially in High Hope.
That's
so
true.
Yeah, true. I think it does kind of balance out, I suppose.
Yeah.
But yes, I mean, what would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we've both ended up saying the same thing, and I think, I mean, I like her, I like her on a thought board. I do like her.
Same.
She'd be that friend though, wouldn't it, where you'd have to be like, just get a grip. She'd be that friend that you have in a friendship group who would just like meet a guy and fall in love straight away, which to be fair might be me, but I think like she is that friend that you'd have to constantly be like, you haven't thought this through. You know, like, it's great that you're happy, but, you know, maybe just think about the real parts of life as well. I think she would be that friend in the group who was always annoyingly over-optimistic and sometimes just missed, like, the reality. I think I'd like her to be my friend because she seems quite, you know, optimistic, and we could probably make her more robust. But in terms of, like, would she be a role model? Maybe a role model in terms of, like, you know, attitude to life and to people, being optimistic. Role model for Stranger Danger? No.
it's a no. It's like, no. This is what you shouldn't do.
My little sister was actually like, Stranger Danger, like when the Queen came in. So
yeah, I thought the exact same thing.
Naive is definitely, I think, how we would describe her. Because even at the end, like you say, she goes through all of this stuff. She's nearly killed. All these things happen, and she's still so naive that she just jumps up out of this glass coffin and disappears into the sunset. Without questioning anything.
She's in a fantasy land, definitely, like, fantasy world.
That's my problem with her, is that she doesn't question anything. And we should be questioning when, you know, random men kiss us when we're dead.
Yes.
To summarise. Now, and on the flip side, we have the Evil Queen as well. So this is where I think it gets really interesting. So the book I would recommend to you all, I'm going to just get, it's called From Mouse to Mermaid, and it's a book full of like short Disney, like academic Disney essays. It's really, really interesting. I'm going to get the author for you now. But it was in that book, they talk, there's an essay, I'll try and remember the name, but it's about older women in Disney, and it's really interesting in terms of the way that older women are presented, because you always have the younger woman, like Snow White, with this idea of like beauty, femininity, calmness, cleaning, like in the early movies, like with her and Cinderella. And then you always have an older woman there as well to ruin things, whether it's Ursula, whether it's Lady Tremaine, whether it's the Evil Queen. And so, yeah, so the book is called From Mouse to Mermaid, The Politics of Film, Gender and Culture. And it's by Elizabeth Bell, Linda Haas, I think you say it, and Laura Sells. But there's loads in there. And in that one, they talk about how older women are always kind of like villainized, especially if they're unmarried. So I think what's really interesting with her is she was married because she was the stepmom. But it's this idea in older Disney films that, you know, a woman, a single woman with power is dangerous. And I think that's, I don't like that message. you know, you can't have an older woman in a Disney movie normally, who's an active part of the film, especially in the older ones, who is powerful and respected for it. It has to be that their power is feared. So I think, I mean, a lot of that's probably subconscious stuff from the time frame and linked to witchcraft and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking as well.
But it's just a shame that that's the way it's portrayed. And so you're either, as a woman, you're either weak, naive, bit dim, there to kind of service other people, or you're a lonely old hag who everyone fears and wants to, you know, remove your power because you're dangerous. It links more back to the older films, but it is problematic for me. And the fact as well, that's what frustrated me, is the fact that the reason the Evil Queen hates Snow is literally because she's prettier and younger than her.
Yeah, this is the issue as well that I have.
Who's running the kingdom? Also, where is the kingdom? We never see any other houses or kingdom.
I know. Yeah.
Baffles me a little bit. And especially because the dwarves know about the princess. So I'm like...
She's obviously famous, but where are all these other people that live here?
That is another question for Disney, if you're listening. Where are the people in this kingdom?
Has the Evil Queen just cast them all out because they were too beautiful? Like, they weren't... they were always the most beautiful one.
But where does the prince just randomly come from? Like, there's just no wider
There's a
community.
Lot of mystery. We need an explanation.
Even
really.
In the castle, like, there's no... You don't see servants or anything like that. So it's a bit weird. But yeah, I think, you know, the whole thing of the reason that she hates Snow and about this idea of, like, you know, older women being envious of youth and beauty and feeling threatened, everything associated with the Evil Queen is negative. Even her power is seen as negative and weird. And the only thing that maybe could redeem her is if she was a good ruler, and we don't even get to see that. All we see is her obsession with being younger and more beautiful. So I think the Evil Queen's presentation is far more problematic than Snow White's, is my opinion. I don't know if you agree.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And I think because her goal in life and ambition is even worse than Snow's. It's just to be the most beautiful person in the land. And that's a weak ambition. Like, that's really, and it's very, like, based on self-esteem as well.
Yeah.
And it just makes it look like all women think about is how they look. And it also makes them look very kind of scared and, like, competitive. Like, they're always worried about the other women around them.
That's so true.
They have to look at them and kind of try and be more pretty than them every time they, like, dress up and go out and to impress the men. Like, it's really not sending a positive message at all. And I think, like you say, the age doesn't help with that either, because it just makes her look really resentful.
Yeah.
I think she could have had so much more ambition than that. And I think that's the kind of thing you want to see in a Disney film, is you want to see the kind of arc of a Disney villain, and you kind of want to see a bit more about their background as to, like, why they are the way they are as well.
Well, that's why the new books have been so successful, with the tales and the villains' perspectives, and why Maleficent was so revolutionary, because everyone was like, like Wicked, which obviously isn't Disney, but that blew up because it was such an alternative perspective. So you're right, people love a backstory, and we know nothing about this queen.
Yeah, and I also am a massive fan of redemption arcs as well. Yeah. And I like to see a redeeming feature in a villain.
Like Sharpay in High School Musical.
Yeah, exactly. Honestly, like, I'm such a sucker for redemption arcs, like, in villains. Honestly, like, villains end up being my favourite characters in a lot of things, because I just love, like, when we kind of get deep with them and you find out why they are the way they are.
Yeah.
You kind of have that sympathy for them there. And there's no sympathy for the Evil Queen. She just comes across as very kind of self-obsessed and... like, self-conscious about herself, and, like I said, like, she's not really got any ambition at all.
No.
And she just comes across very cruel in that way as well, and it's just a bit sad to see that that's all she cares about.
She has no redeeming features, does she?
No, not at all.
Whereas even though Snow's very naive, there are problems with Snow in terms of, like, would she survive in the real world? She has those redeeming features of, you know, being caring and kind and friendly and optimistic and quite selfless, although that can be problematic in itself. They are positive qualities, whereas the Evil Queen literally has none. And again, she's there just to facilitate the younger person as well.
Yeah, exactly. And she is there to be the problem as well. So like, obviously every story needs a problem and like to kind of guide the plot. Otherwise, if there's no problem, I mean, it's just a happy story that no one cares about.
No one watches.
So she's literally been put there like as a tool to create the plot and further it in that direction. And I think that's also like, she's not very present in the film.
That's so true. Which is fine. We all need a problem. Like we say, films need problems. The problem with this problem is that the problem isn't realistic. Like, she has the kingdom. Like, Snow's gone. And it's that idea that, you know, for me, I felt like her motive just wasn't believable. I was like, it just doesn't feel... Yeah. It doesn't feel like a woman of that status and that power, with that amount of authority, would waste that much time and energy trying to hunt down some random girl in the forest to kill her so she can be prettier. It doesn't make any sense to me.
It just comes across a bit pathetic as well. Yeah. Like, I don't know, if that was me, I'd look at myself in that mirror and think, what am I doing? Like, asking this mirror every single day, am I the fairest of them all? Come on, there must be other things that you should be doing. Like you say, like leading this country, like, you know, doing stuff with the people. Like,
well, that's so
what
true.
Is happening?
And I wonder, like, you know, there must be other young women in the random village that exists in nowhere that are prettier than her.
Surely. Because as well, can we just address the fact, so if she's meant to be the fairest in the land and she's meant to be pretty, she's not at all pretty in my opinion.
No, they haven't. The animators made her look too scary. Whereas if you watch, if you watch like Mirror Mirror, obviously like one of the more recent reimaginings with Julia Roberts, I mean, wow, fair.
Yeah, upgrade.
Like, that's okay. And I don't know the actress's name, but in Snow White and the Huntsman, the queen in that as well, stunning. Mm-hmm. So fair. Whereas in this one, you just feel a bit like, you can't even see her hair. And then when you can see her hair, she looks like Cruella de Vil. So it's just a bit, you're right, I was watching it being like, I mean, I don't think Snow White is a problem.
Yeah, as you kind of watch it, you're like, actually... like her scenes just aren't very like believable. One thing I will say, I don't know if this is redeeming or not as such, but I remember when I was younger, I was terrified of her.
Oh god, yeah.
And I do think she is quite scary, and I think like her cackling's very scary as well, especially for kids. Like, I do think she is quite terrifying. And she is terrifying as the old hag as well.
That's really scary when she appears in the window. I still
honestly
like,
it's terrifying. So I do think at least she's scary. At least she is like an evil queen. She could be more scary, but at least she actually fits the bill in that respect compared to other villains.
I mean, although Ursula also fits into that, you know, that stereotype of older women, as is Lady Tremaine. We'll talk more about them in future episodes, but you look at their motives and it makes more sense. And, you know, Lady Tremaine, the idea that she's hiding Cinderella because her two daughters are pathetic and she just makes them look bad and it's for money and stuff like that. Whereas, you know, same as with Ursula, it's because she wants to be in control of the kingdom. So, you know, as questionable as it may be, it's admirable in terms of ambition. Whereas the evil queen, she doesn't care about anything else. So I think it's a waste of a character, unfortunately. And I think I'm happy that a lot of more recent interpretations have made her far more interesting. I mean, if you've got any Once Upon a Time fans, but, you know, Regina as the evil queen, amazing. And the fact that she wants to kill Snow because of all that stuff to do with her dad and like people dying and all that kind of stuff, like it's deeper. So I'm glad that the role itself has gotten like more development over the years, because I think it's a great role. I just think that unfortunately Disney focused again, as we said, on the animation, and the animation for An Evil Queen is not as beautiful as the animation for Snow herself.
I agree. And also if anyone's seen Descendants as well, so obviously the Evil Queen is in that, but what I love about that is that you see her descendant, so her daughter Evie. And I love Evie's character because she's kind of like a good version of what the Evil Queen could have been like. But she's also quite cutesy. So it's a good mixture.
Nice.
She's also like quite scary, but I'd really recommend Descendants actually, because it's very interesting to see what they've decided that their descendants would be like.
We should definitely do a podcast on Descendants at some point.
I think so, because like there's three films as well, so we've got the stuff to talk about.
We'll plan it in. We'll pop it on Instagram and see if people are interested in one.
Yeah.
If people are, then we'll definitely get on that.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, so there's so many versions of the Evil Queen, and as we've said, they're probably better versions than the original.
Please stand clear of the doors. Por favor, manténganse alejado de las puertas.
And then that brings us to the end of this segment. So on to our final Disney fun fact of today, with Snow White is one of the very few Disney characters who have been honoured on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Others include Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, and Winnie the Pooh. Yes, so I knew this. So I knew that Snow White was the first Disney princess to get her her star on the Walk of Fame. Yeah, I'm not sure who else is on there. I feel like Elsa might be on there, but I could be.
Yeah, I was thinking Elsa's probably on there. Maybe is Moana on there? I don't know,
but I think she's definitely one of the princesses on there. So you're in Hollywood and you're looking for Disney stars, you should be able to find Snow White.
And it's definitely something like I want to visit one day and take pictures of and stuff.
Definitely.
So now our final segment, and I think probably the most exciting segment, the one you've probably been waiting for. And to be honest, I still don't know, and I'm glad I'm not going first because I still don't know how I'm rating this out of 10. But we're just going to kind of discuss our overall thoughts of Snow White, and then we'll come to a conclusion of what our rating out of 10 is. As hard as that's going to be, especially as I was thinking this before we started recording, this is our first one, so we don't want to set the bar, so we don't want to set it too low or too high, so I'm a bit nervous because I don't want to destroy it, but also like, I don't want to be too generous because then in retrospect it'll be a disaster going forward.
I feel like I know where I'm going.
Interesting. Okay.
I feel like I know where I'm going.
Well, on that note then, so what are your overall thoughts on the film?
So I think,
and how would you rate it?
Summarising what I said before, just really quickly. Enjoyed the film to watch as a novelty. Enjoyed it to share with someone who hadn't seen it before. I did laugh at quite a bit of it, so I probably laughed at parts that the animators probably wouldn't want me to laugh at, but I did. wouldn't listen to the soundtrack. Wouldn't necessarily turn it on as a favourite movie. I enjoy meeting Snow in the parks, kind of. She's a great picture opportunity, but she wouldn't be like a princess that I'd probably queue for. Just because I don't feel, again, like I don't feel a pull like I would with other princesses. So yeah, like an enjoyable watch every now and again, not a fave, and not one that I'd rewatch because it's not gripping enough for me, and it doesn't have enough inspiration. I love, as we mentioned last week, I love an inspiring, motivated, independent female lead, and unfortunately she doesn't tick any of those boxes. For me, it's going to be a 4.5 out of 10. I'm sorry, Snow. I'm sorry. But, you know, I was going to say 4, but I was like, you know, I do like the animation and I like quite a few of the scenes and I enjoyed the film overall. So 4.5 is where I'm putting it. Mic drop.
Interesting. Okay. That is interesting. I think we're quite similar, which is good, because I mean we've had the same points of view, so I'm glad I've like kind of leveled out.
Yeah.
I was a bit worried we'd be all over the place. But yeah, I suppose like my overall thoughts are very similar to yours in that I suppose like for its time the animation was incredible and I can completely understand why it was such a big deal when it came out. I think the animals kind of make the film for me, as I've said repeatedly. I do love animals, as you'll probably find out, because I'll mention them pretty much every episode if there are animals in the film.
Even if there's not, should be like, there's no animals, I hate this.
I'll find a way, that'll probably bring it down. I'll be like, that's a 0.5 down, there was no animals in this film. yeah, they are kind of the main draw to the film for me. It's very nostalgic. I don't know if that, I mean, I guess that is kind of like a redeeming feature because
yeah,
it's kind of a good thing. And yeah, I do have issues because there's a whole damsel in distress thing. There's not really a lot of personality going on, apart from the dwarves. Like, they've got good personalities, but you know, male characters. So I think again, like, I would watch it every now and then, but I would never pick it over any of the other princess films. I think literally every single princess film.
Maybe Cinderella, but I quite like
I suppose that's the nearest one. Well, Sleeping Beauty as well. Like, I prefer Maleficent to Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah, and I prefer the story. Again, Sleeping Beauty's story makes sense.
It does.
As irrelevant as she may be to her own story.
Yes.
The story actually, like, you know, is gripping and you are a bit like, don't you flip and touch that needle. Whereas, like, in this, you're just a bit like, of course she's going to eat the apple. She's that stupid.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, you know where it's going. There's no, like, real surprise going on there. But, yeah, I think it is, like, it's a sweet film. And, like, the whole optimistic and positivity thing, I think it is nice. And it is an enjoyable watch. but it is quite slow. And I think if you have to compare it to the other films, it just doesn't hit the same bar, does it really?
Yeah, you don't leave your couch or your bed feeling like you're going to change the world. You feel like time for bed, good night.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's kind of like a bedtime story, actually. Yeah. That's a good way to view it. Like, if I was to show my kids that film, I would probably show it in the nighttime and be like, here's a little story for you to drift off to sleep with. Whereas like Princess and the Frog would be like, right, pay attention. This is what you need to do in life.
So
work
you
hard.
Your life.
Yeah. But yeah, the soundtrack, like Hi Ho, is pretty catchy. So I'll give it that, and it's an enjoyable watch. So I was going to give it a 5. Now, I suppose that's quite generous in retrospect. It's only a 0.5 away from yours, though, so it's not too bad.
I mean, I was between 4 and 5, and then was like, we're going to the only reason I went lower than a 5 is because I thought we've got a lot to get through, and there are some Disney movies that we're going to review that I think neither Rosie nor I have ever seen.
Yeah, that's true.
I think we'll probably have quite a few mid points.
Yeah.
And some very high points. I can tell you my Tangled rating right now. So there's going to be some high points. So I just felt like, you know, for me, the redeeming parts were the fact that I love that dancing scene. I love the tools. I love that, like, you know, that whole community feeling. I like the animation, the detail. But for me, the massive part is the fact that the story was just missing. Like, it's not a gripping story.
Yeah,
so.
I agree. Actually, I might change it to 4.75. So then it's not quite as generous, but it's also a bit, I think that's what I'm going to go with. Because you're right, it's hard to kind of form the benchmark at this point. Like, just because I'm thinking of what's to come. There's a lot of good to come. There's a lot of ones that I think we will actually probably disagree on when we review them.
Yeah.
Like, so, yeah, I'll go with 4.75.
Please stand clear of the doors. Por favor, manténganse alejado de las puertas.
So that then brings us to the end of our discussion, which is exciting. So that was really fun. I love talking about Disney movies. So just before we finish, again, thank you. If you're still here, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed our rambles. So you can subscribe whatever platform you're listening to. So on Apple Podcasts, some of you may be listening on to, please click that subscribe button to get kind of alerts as to when we're popping up. We're really keen to hopefully get on the new and noteworthy section, so that would really help us out. If you prefer to follow on like Safari or stuff like that, and you're listening on Podbean, you can go onto our website, which is, the link is in our Instagram bio, and you can click subscribe on there as well. We're also on like things like iHeartRadio, and there are other things that we're on as well. So if you just search Sprinkler Disney Podcasts, you'll be able to find us via Google, because we're also on YouTube as well, if you prefer a YouTube listen. So you can find us everywhere. If you want to leave a review, we'd also love that. And tell us your Instagram handle so we can kind of like check in and give you some love on Insta. And you know, if you have any recommendations of what you want us to talk about, also pop that in there as well. We're really flexible. We're also looking probably maybe from like next podcast, maybe we need to put a definite plan in place. But we mentioned last time that we really want to have a slot for small Disney shops or businesses to advertise within our podcast. So obviously initially we're kind of going to offer this out for free because we're quite new and we really want to support small businesses, especially in the current climate. So we will put more up about that, I think, on our Instagram. So keep an eye, if you are a Disney business or you know someone who's a small Disney business, have a look out for that, because you can get some cheeky free advertising, and we'd love to work with you on that as well. So keep an eye out for that when we open up slots. We'll probably do like a sign-up basis, like a sign-up form. And do it in that way, I think, will be a good plan. So yeah, keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, and kind of building on that as well, we would also like to have people on as guests. So
yeah.
I think it's always nice to bounce off other people's ideas, and especially because we know each other pretty well as well.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to get someone completely new in the mix, because they might have a completely different opinion. You know, we might start a war over this podcast.
Well, I know a few people that if we'd invited them today,
100%.
There would have been sparks. So,
they would have been. Or we might make a new best Disney friend buddy.
Yeah.
Like, how cute would that be? We'd love to have people on as guests.
That'd be really cute.
So please do reach out to us via our Instagram or our email, which is also on Instagram, but it's just a sprinkle of Disney podcast at gmail.com.
Yeah.
So please do reach out if you'd like to be a guest. But I suppose the most exciting thing to end with is coming up next time, we will be delving into the live action side of Disney by discussing Lady and the Tramps, the live action one that's exclusive to Disney Plus.
I'm so excited, Rosie.
We are very excited for this, because I wasn't sure what I was going to think of this film, and I loved it. So a little bit of spoiler there for you.
I'm so excited.
I'm really excited too. So yeah, we'll be discussing what we think of that film. But we'll also talk about Disney Plus in general as well, like what we think, how we think it's gone, and if it's accessible and it's got lots of stuff on it. And also kind of briefly mention the other films and TV series that we've been enjoying on over there, so you've got kind of things to maybe watch after you've listened to our episode. But yeah, so we're very excited for that, and maybe watch it before listening to the next episode if you're interested. But yeah,
because I'm going to rewatch. I've watched it before. I'm going to rewatch just to, you know, get back.
Mm-hmm. Same.
Get back. It's been a while. So that's all for today from us. So like we said, subscribe to the podcast. Head over to Instagram, give us a follow. YouTube, give us a subscription. Three of you have, so thank you. On YouTube, we have 3 subscribers. Let's keep going. But we've had loads of listens over on Podbean and by Apple Podcasts, so thank you so much. We've been really, really shocked, I think, and overwhelmed.
Yeah, definitely.
On Instagram.
Shocked.
About how many followers we've had and the engagement, so thank you. So speaking of Instagram, some of you may have seen already, but we are currently doing a 30-31 day Disney challenge for photographs. So we're aware that at the moment lots of us can't travel to Disney, just play our violin in the background, and so lots of us are kind of reliving it through Disney photographs. So we are really enjoying sharing Disney photographs across Instagram with obviously, both me and Rosie are posting, but we're getting other Instagrammers involved as well to post their favourite ones. So we'd love you to head over and kind of get involved with that photo challenge. For example, today was our favourite Disney Instagrammer day, which is one of my favourite ones so far. It's been really lovely to celebrate fellow Disney Instagrammers. So head over to that, and we'd love to see you get involved with that. So as Rosie said, if you want to inquire about anything, listen to our head over to our email address. And we've been a Sprinkle of Disney. Have a magical rest of your day.